Good, okay.
I can't hear myself, so. Joe, you can take this thing.
That makes more sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have it, yes. Fair point.
It's the right height.
Yes. Yeah,
it's the right height, amen. It's the right height for me, too.
All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Garrett. For those who don't know me, oh, Kendall and Lola's boy over there. This is my wife, Joanna. We've been married since May 15th. Then we had our second marriage in July.
No. To each other, just to clarify.
It was good having our folks there and some family there. Trish couldn't make it, but she had Rowan, so that was kind of more important. And no, it's just really a pleasure to be here. We haven't said hi to everyone yet, but we look forward to talking to you hopefully later on. You can come and talk to us and whatnot, and we'll be here up until the 4th we leave, and that'd be good. Introductions, so that's us. What do I do for a living? Work full-time staff with InterVarsity, who's linked with Joanna's ministry, the GBU, which is the French branch, well, French version, not French branch, French version of my ministry. Work full-time with college students, spreading the gospel on and around campuses and in local cities, and organizing Bible studies, events, trainings. We'll get more into that. Mm-hmm. And GBU is kind of the same thing. So, yeah. Oh, I work as a local team, and Joanna is not my boss, but she is a higher rank than me.
Hi. So my name's Joanna. I was born and raised in France. My parents are from the Philippines, so I grew up speaking English at home and being somewhat familiar with American culture, so it works out. and I've been with the GBU since I started my studies in arts. I was just a volunteer, and slowly, after my studies, I decided to do a 2-year internship with them. And afterwards, the Lord gave the opportunity for me to take over the job of my,
predecessor?
Yeah, I guess so. The person who was training me.
Yeah, your boss.
Who went back to Australia. And so now I'm the regional coordinator in the southwest of France, but we'll get more into that and show how big the region is. So my job is to help the student leaders to organize events, start new groups, share the vision of the GBU, help them understand how to do things and lead Bible studies, etc.
So the GBU was founded in 1943. It stands for University Bible Groups, Groupe Biblique Universitaire. It started in 1943, so during World War II. It's the best time to start a new Bible study group. It started by a group of Christian students who saw lots of a need for the gospel to be spread on their campuses and around, and so they started one. In the puppet state in the south of France during that time. And it's one of the founding members of IFES, International Fellowship of Evangelical Students. Don't worry, you don't need to memorize all the acronyms. There's no test afterwards. But them and the InterVarsity are linked with that. And so that's how I'm able to work with GBU and InterVarsity at the same time. And it's in around, how many campuses? A lot of them.
Not enough.
Not enough. There's too many that we need to get on. And there's around 80 student-led groups throughout France, throughout the whole of France. Is there anything else to say on that?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, okay, you go for it.
So the motto of the GBU is making the Bible known in universities and through its study the gospel of Jesus Christ. And our main activity is Bible studies that are seeker-friendly. So we really encourage the Christian students to not use words that only Christians understand, like, I don't know, salvation or like
sanctification
and all those words that most French people have no idea what you're talking about. And so it's a real learning process for a lot of Christians, especially those who grew up in Christian households where for them it's just normal, for them to learn that it's not normal to talk like that, and to help them share the gospel in a way that's understandable by everyone. Yeah, so as I said, I was a student when I first joined the GBU. We organized weekends retreats in different regions. So that's, see if you can spot me somewhere in there. That's in a small city in, west of France. And those times were really great for, like, we studied the Bible in an intensive manner. Usually we'd have a guest speaker, or maybe the coordinator would be the guest speaker. I think that weekend we went through Acts, and it blew my mind. it really helped me understand the structure of the Bible and God's plan of salvation throughout history. So it's just really great times for students and just discipling as well.
So French Christianity as a whole is not a very a common religion, even though people would identify as Catholic. Almost 50%, only around 14% of those actually practice once a month. And then there's mostly aucune religion, means no religion. And then I can't see the tinier one next to that.
Protestants is 3%.
And Protestants makes about 3% of the nation. So yeah. It's so in our city of, well, how big is our city actually in France size? It's the fourth biggest city in France, and we have actually a pretty good number of churches, but I think Fairbury has just as many. So that gives you a kind of idea of how small the Protestant church is in France. And go ahead.
Just to clarify, the question that was asked in this survey was, what do you identify as? Mm. So when they mean Catholic, it could mean anything from I go to Mass every Sunday to my grandmother was vaguely religious. So this also means that Protestants could be from Reformed tradition to evangelical as well. So it's quite a broad spectrum. Evangelicals represent more or less 1% of the population, but it's a 1% that usually is very practicing and are like actual Christians, can put it that way. But it's a growing number, so that's really encouraging as well.
You want to speak about the Enlightenment?
Yeah, I can.
Historical thing.
So just to put into context, France is really, really, really prides itself for being a country of reason and history and the Enlightenment and the Renaissance period and all these things. So religion kind of became obsolete. It's something that you use to understand the world when science didn't exist. And now that science is here, well, we don't need God anymore. Well, at least that's what most people think or assume. I would say that a lot of students or just the general population, they don't give that much thought to religion or to God. So they don't actually question whether or not their beliefs is a belief or a correct belief. I would say most people who say they have no religion, they would probably even say, I don't believe in anything, which of course is not true. Everybody believes in something, but nobody questions their beliefs and presuppositions. Mm-hmm.
Catholicism. All right. So for our campuses, so I am in Toulouse, as I said, like it's fourth or fifth, depends on the day, largest city in France. And we have three major universities in the city. It has over 115,000 students. That changes. So it's a pretty big student city, even for being a big city itself. Very secular, laïcité, that's the separation of church and state. So different than the US, where it's like, it's the state pushing away the church, not so much the church pushing away the state. And groups are student-led. We want to encourage students because students struggle with taking initiative, taking responsibility. And so we try to gear them and say, you actually can do these things. You can share your gospel with your friends. And we don't want just to start a Bible study on campus. We want just a group of Christian students together. We want to start a group of people together reading the Bible and studying it in God's Word and getting further and deeper into that. And so, as Joanna said earlier, seeker friendly, so open to non-Christians. And we also do special events. So we have Veritas Forums. Veritas is truth in Greek, I believe I'm saying it right.
And
Latin. Shoot. So that's the same. I didn't study it yet. So it's where there's two speakers from different worldviews. One will be Christian, one will be from another worldview. And they'll speak on one of their specialties, one of the things they're knowledgeable about. So we had one not too long ago about...
It was the end times in the Bible and in Quran. So the Christian speaker was a specialist on the Islam. He comes from a Muslim background, but he's a Christian. And the other speaker was also a specialist on the Islam, but this time he's a Muslim. Mm-hmm.
And then we also have ones about ecology and things like that, because those are quote unquote hot button issues that can drive people to come and check out what's going on. I think I have So in those two photos there, we have our two groups in Toulouse. One on the with me in the mask, just with my nose and eyes showing. That one's mostly only Christians. We try to encourage them to invite their friends, and two of the people really want to, but then the others are just like, they're just comfortable. So it's about getting them outside their comfort zone, saying you can do this, and continue to encourage them. Where the one next to it, well, I'll just say the difference between, so campuses are very specialized, so, and university is very specialized, so the one with me in the nose is specialized in engineering and
sciences,
where the one next to it, that one specializes in literature, language,
liberal arts,
and that one's very diverse. We have a Jew, an atheist, agnostic, different ranges of Protestants, and we had one Catholic, he's less consistent, and a practicing Jew too, so, and they're just really open, they love being there, and so that's really encouraging. And the students there, we have four people from Burundi too. There's a lot of internationals that come in, and internationals are honestly a huge blessing because they don't have the same
approach
reservations about sharing their faith. And so it encourages French as well. And yep. So on campuses, we do stands and also trainings and such. So yeah, you can't see him, but that's one of our student leaders, Paul, doing a thumbs up. On the two different campuses, it's a very different thing. We did one recently. It was you come, we pose a question to you, and you get a chocolate in return or a cookie or whatever. They love it. And the question was, what does Christmas mean to you, and do you know the origin? And of the 40 students we asked, only three actually knew what the origin was. And that was one Catholic and two Muslims. And all the rest of the students had no idea what Christmas was about. Like, didn't even know Jesus was even associated with it. They just thought it was a state holiday. And they just thought it was about capitalism, that was about it. You can talk about, then we can also talk about training.
Yeah, so the other picture is a training I give to different groups that we train them to learn how to read the Bible in a inductive method. So we call it the OIA method, observation, interpretation, and application. So the idea is not to come to the text with your own preconceived notions and like context and culture and things like that, but to try and really dig and understand what does the text mean in its context. How does it apply to the original readers, and how can we apply it to our lives today? And that's really good for Christians who sometimes they just read the Bible and they're like, oh, it says this. This is the obvious takeaway, but sometimes it's not. And also for non-Christians, because that helps them see, oh, the Bible is more than just a book of like maybe fables and myths or things like that, but actually something that I can apply in my daily life. Mm-hmm.
So other cities we have, this is Joanna's more stomping ground, but we have three other cities that are starting groups in or already have groups established, Figeac, Bordeaux, which you may know for the wine, and Albi, that's all in our southwest region. Mm-hmm. We'll have a picture of where the different region is later.
You can skip to the next one.
Well, I'm going to talk about Jean.
Oh, yeah.
So Jean is actually one of the guys, a disciple. He's starting a new group at Figeac, which Joanna's helped pushing forward, and it's a very small town. How many people is it?
Like
10,000. So it's like Beatrice size, but it has a university. And so we're trying to start a group there as well. Small town, quote unquote.
Are you going to talk about Jean?
Jean, he is a guy that he got in contact with you?
So he's been trying to start a group for the past 3 years on his campus, but it's the first time that he has another Christian person in his town.
Yeah.
Another Christian student, I should say. So the first year he wanted to do a Bible study, and he just got up in class and said, does anybody want to come to this Bible study I'm doing about Christmas? And 15 people showed up. Then he tried doing it again at Easter, there was less people, but that's really brave of him, mm-hmm. I think. The second year he tried, it was a bit harder because it was COVID and it was really complicated. Three people showed up to his online study, Bible study for Christmas too. And this year, he tried doing something, but nobody showed up, and we're trying to encouraging and help him find how to do Bible studies, because he is currently doing an internship, so he's 3 weeks off campus and 1 week on campus. So that makes it much more difficult to actually evangelize on campus when you're not there, so. Mm-hmm.
So Southwest, we have five cities. Three groups were are being created. So like Toulouse, we said like there was almost 115,000 students. And you can see the little markers. That's where the different campuses are, or we're planning to have them be. Most of them, they already are there. You want to talk about the group at?
I can talk about the groups. So the specificity of the GBU, because it's student-led, that means that the cycle of a group is usually about 3 years. So that means if nobody is here to take over the group, then the group just dies. And that's just kind of how it is, and it's something that's hard sometimes for me to accept, but that's part of life. So for example, this map is maybe a little bit optimistic. in reality, groups that are actually active is Bordeaux and Toulouse, where I don't really need to worry so much about it because the students are active. And in all the other cities, it's either groups that are trying to start up or are tiny or that have died in the past years, especially with COVID. So finding new student leaders can be a challenge. It just really depends on the years. And students in France, they really change campus. Let's say, at best, they stay on campus for 5 years if they do a master's, but it can be as short as maybe 2 years or 1 year. So the turnover is really, really high. Mm-hmm. So that means it's constantly vision casting and training and starting over groups and just adapting to the life cycle of the different student groups.
It was really shocking for me. And also, most students don't live on campus. And also, they go home during the weekends. So some of them will just leave Friday night to go home and be with their folks or such like that. So you can't have student evenings and the weekends or weekend activities. It's really hard to recruit. And so it's just about adapting and trying to figure out how to make things work, which was very hard for me as an American growing up in the university system here. Still working on it, but it's going better. I'm going to talk about one other thing with the, forgot. Well, so the GBU in a general as a size-wise is in, like we said, 80 different campuses. Biggest ones are in Paris, of course, and it's growing in Paris. And we also have national meetings, one called the RNM, how do you say that? National Missionary Meeting. How do you translate that? That was a pretty good one. We had it at our president's hometown, the president of France, Macron.
Oh, yes. In the school where he met his wife.
Yes. When he was a student, she was a teacher in high school. Anyway, that's enough of our president. it's a very weird study. And for now, we love some questions, and we love to field some questions. But before that, I'm going to get through just general prayer requests and prayers that are answered. So one big prayer request being answered is able to come here. Mm-hmm. Also that the student groups are both all growing for the most part. In Bordeaux, they had a Christmas party. They had
25 people came to their their evening, which is quite a lot.
A lot.
I know they were really stressed out about it, and they did a good job. So that's really great.
One of the people was like, I hope just five people come. Or
Another great news about Bordeaux is that they used to have three groups before COVID. They went back down to one group during COVID, and now they're thinking of starting a new one in the city center. So that's going to be really good for student outreach because the campuses are really far apart from each other in that city.
So groups are being created in Bordeaux and Albi. Oh yeah, you didn't talk about Albi.
It's fine.
Oh, we'll get that. Okay. And we're meeting in person again, which is a huge help because both of our groups, one group we had like three every week, and now we're up to 10 or 12, depending on the week, or four because it's France. prayer requests. So I've taken on the role of co-directing a ski camp in the east of France in the Alps. Very classy, you know. But I've only skied I've never skied actually. I've snowboarded a couple times, so that'll be great. So just pray I don't die, and that we just have an enjoyable time. It's going to be a week long. We have this 2 weeks in a row. I'll be there the second week, and it's just up in the mountains. It's evangelism focused, and up in the mountains of the Alps. We'll be skiing most of the days or snowboarding, and then have Bible study during the night or Bible discussion during the night. And so prayer for students to come, because students are still timid and worried about COVID, reasonably or unreasonably, and as for the training and formation, everything.
So some prayer requests. As we said, there's a lot of local groups are struggling, or it's really hard for them to figure out how to do things. But then again, a lot of groups are starting up, which is really great news. So you can pray for the student leaders that they persevere and be creative, and just ask also for help from their local church. And also, please pray for us traveling back to France, because it seems that it's going to be a bit more more complicated than we anticipated. We're transiting through London, and London right now is on lockdown. Well, not lockdown, but they're closing their borders. Mm-hmm. So I think we should be fine, but Omicron, the new variant, is predicted to be the dominant variant around the same time we come back. So we would appreciate some prayers for that.
Safe travel and whatnot. And then this is contact info. Would love to field some questions or whatever you may have.
I have a question or a couple of them, actually. We'll all come home here.
Oh, thank you.
Have you ever been to the United States before?
I've been to Philadelphia and Los Angeles when I was like six. I was too into dinosaurs, so I was really small.
Dinosaurs are cool.
Yeah, dinosaurs are cool. So I grew up in a Christian household. My parents attended a Chinese-Filipino church that was planted by American missionaries, Presbyterian, I believe. So I just grew up in a Christian household, and they were really involved in a local church. For me, it was just normal to go to church every Sundays. It was probably non-negotiable also. but I didn't really mind. And I don't know, it was just natural for me. And I went to a Catholic school growing up, up to high school. So being with a mix of atheists, agnostics, and also Catholics, it really helped me solidify my faith, and it became really personal. Maybe I became a little bit arrogant about it, because I was like, oh, you Catholics, you don't understand things, and like, obviously the little red light on the altar, that doesn't mean that Jesus is here, Jesus is always here, or, you know. But it really helped me with my critical thinking, and I'm grateful for that. I think God has really protected me, and it was just natural, I guess.
Great question. So I guess this works. So actually, when we did stands, we're not allowed to do the stands on campus legally. We're not allowed to meet on campus in an organized fashion, depending on the campus. And there's also rules where we can do certain things, but it's how the campuses interpret those rules. So we may have legal rights, but they aren't necessarily always enforced to a certain extent, so we can get booted off. So when we do the stands, we do them right at the entrance of the campus. Which is, they can't do anything about, and it's a mobile stand, so we can just pack it up and leave if we get persecuted. They were not necessarily persecuted, and students, honestly, like, when we did the stands on campus, when we talk about Jesus, no one even goes, oh, no, it's like, always like, oh, okay, cool, all right. Some of them are even, like, really interested, or they bring back their friend to talk about it, because they're curious. So, honestly, the biggest challenge is just getting the word out that we exist, and not so much people causing issues for us. Which is encouraging, because even in the liberal arts campuses, actually, they're even more open. We talk to non-binary people, lesbian, and they're just like completely okay talking to us. They don't feel like we're hating them or anything, so it's encouraging.
You want to talk about laïcité?
Yeah.
So we talked about laïcité, this concept of separation of church and state, which is really a big thing in France, and I think it's quite unique. In fact, when COVID first started, all the other IFES movements in Europe were kind of panicking, because they're just used to meet in campus and have all these possibilities. Whereas in France, we're like, oh, it doesn't really change much for us. We're already so used to have to be creative and just figure things out as we go on that it's fine for us. We have more rights than a lot of Christians would think. So the National Council of Evangelicals of France, they edited these small booklets about what does the law say about sharing your faith on campus, in school, and at work. A recent study found that about 90% of evangelicals share their faith, or at least their colleagues know that they're Christians. So that's really good, and not a lot of them actually feel persecuted. Sometimes they feel like they're being rejected or treated unfairly, but that's to be expected in a sense. If you're a teacher, you're not, because you're a representative of the state, you're not allowed to share your faith and share your religious opinion. But as a student, you have the freedom to share your own beliefs, and that's something that most students aren't aware of, or that the school doesn't enforce. Recently, though, there have been some, not issues, but concerns for the evangelicals in France, because the government has recently passed new laws to, let's say, restrict and control a little bit more how organized religion assembles. The law was put in place for the extreme Muslim movements, but it also applies to evangelical movements who maybe have a little bit less of a historical precedent in France, even though we have a good relationship with the government in general. So they like restrict a little bit more if we get a lot of big donations from other countries, which of course affects the evangelical churches, because usually we're really small and everybody are the people who handle the finances are volunteers, so they don't really have that much time to get into all the new administrative stuff that are going to be put in place. But it seems like we should be okay. But it is a cause for concern, and the National Council is discussing with the government and telling them that we actually don't cause any trouble, and your new laws would be have a big impact on our local communities.
There was the, what was it about, like the minister of, oh, what did he say?
I don't know.
The minister, what are you talking about, like how we're a big threat towards France, or?
No, I mean, the media and the government, they often, because again, the evangelical movement isn't really that well known in France, only 1% of the population. You hear a lot of press, they would say, they would call us, not evangelicals, but evangelists.
Evangelists, yes.
Instead of evangelical. So that really shows that there's a big misunderstanding about who we are. So I'm really grateful that we have a national council that regroups a wide breadth of the evangelical movement on the spectrum, let's say, from the Baptists all the way to the charismatic churches, who are here to understand the law and help out local churches and tell the government who we are and show what we do and show that we are really willing to work with them and transparent and not dangerous, basically.
Questions? So I actually did have a team when I was with the Navigators, but and I lived with one of the guys for a while. But this is different because, well, she's my wife. One of the big differences is just also challenging one another in, because work and life balance, especially because we both work in the same region, the same ministry. I imagine a lot of missionaries struggle with this. But it's just like, when am I not working? And so that's, so it's just like, if I meet with someone from church, does that work, or is that, and it helps that we work with students specifically, but sometimes, like, if I'm meeting with my friend online and doing a Bible study, am I working with him, or is that just fun? Or he used to be a student, now is that okay? And separating, making, like, because sometimes when it's work, you turn into work brain, we're like, well, this isn't fun, or like, I'm not supposed to enjoy this, so it's work. And it's not very healthy, and we have both struggled with that, or like helping our local church. But mostly it's been good. yes, really.
Well, I've stopped bringing things up at like 11 p.m., so that helps.
Yeah. Like about to go to bed, like, do you think this person? It's like so work-life balance is still a challenge, but things that have been good is just being able to pray together, encourage one another, talk about different students, and
Because she worked locally before I did, and so some of the challenges were the expectations, just with like everything in life, but like there's expectations like I would know certain things, or I thought she would share certain things with me because I was coming in like a newbie, or she thought, because, well, you worked full-time with this kind of ministry, but it's just different, and so I'm still adapting and learning about GBU and how it works, but still going really good. And I'm bringing in some things I learned from the Navigators, like discipleship, which mm-hmm. GBU is trying to work on, mm-hmm. so I can be an asset in that way. And it also does help that my French has improved dramatically in the past 2 years, so that's been a good thing as well.
Thank you.
So do you speak French at home?
No. Yes.
Was the question, what do you speak at home?
Yeah.
So we speak English at home, but everywhere else we speak French.
Yeah.
Church, with one of our friends, even when it's bilingual, it's usually always like in French. Because we even have a friend from, her parents are missionaries from South Africa, and we speak French with her, besides one time, because mm-hmm. it's been a long time since I spoke with anyone else in English.
Well, I think it's mostly, what's the first language you spoke with that person that just kind of sticks? So the first language I spoke with Garrett was in English, so now it's hard for me to switch to French. Plus, that's the language I grew up with at home, so for me it's just like a home-heart language, I guess. Whereas with our bilingual friends, usually we don't know we're bilingual, so we just speak in French, and, oh, you're bilingual, and it's too late. So we just speak in French.
Also, what's your church like? So is it a big church, or what's the dynamic?
Our church here is bigger than our church in France. Well, our church also is in a weird spot, because COVID really hurt our church a lot. Because when I got there, it was so I was in Paris for 6 months before I moved to Toulouse. And by the time I got to Toulouse, it was already big COVID times. And so the church had shrank, and people were starting to do online, but people still haven't come back after being online. Our church is, I want to talk about all the problems of our church. It has a lot of issues. One of the biggest issues is we have 11 elders, but our church is smaller than this church. So it's instead of, oh, go ahead.
Let's just say I come from the Baptist Federation, and this church is from the Reform Evangelical Union. So I'm not familiar with that. It's the equivalent of Presbyterian, basically.
We're conservative Presbyterian.
Yeah. This event, well, okay. so it's a church with a lot of traditions and way of doing things. And a strong church culture. So it's hard for people who have been there for a very long time to change or be willing to adapt. We've recently have a new pastor, so that's been really good and encouraging. We just hope he's not gonna like burn out. but so far, so good.
There's not a people expect the elders and the pastor to do everything. Yeah. It's to a very, very unhealthy degree. And so even us with church cleaning, it's complicated. Just to get people to clean the church or something like that. Yeah. But really good things is the doctrine's good. Mm-hmm. People are really loving. No one's, but they still get arguments and such. It's a church.
Yeah.
A bunch of imperfect people trying to serve the Lord.
Well, we know why we chose that church. We had so many good options in Toulouse, which we're really grateful for. But we figured we're not here just to come and sit down on Sunday and leave. We also want to get involved and mm-hmm. try and help. So the reason I chose that church when I first arrived in Toulouse was because it was close to where I lived. It was very multi-ethnic and a lot of different generations, and I felt like I could actually serve there. Compared to another church that we really like, but it's mostly young people, all student college age or young families, and we just felt like we're already working with mostly college students, so we need to spend our Sundays with even more college students, and we really wanted the variety that we appreciate in our current church, so that's been good.
Question, where are you headed with the ministry? What are your goals?
Goals.
Go back to their local town and get involved in the church. No, what's happening overall as
a
result.
So we talked, I mean, the GBU.
I can talk about
that. Yeah, more.
So once you're an alumni of the GBU, there's this program, well, it's not really a program, but you can have a status of being a friend of the GBU, where you can help out the current generation of students, be it financially or with practical things like driving people around to get to weekends and stuff like that, or cooking at weekends. So that's been really good because the younger generation of friends at the GBU in Toulouse want to start something and see how can they help. So that's really been
You also notice a lot of pastors were in the GBU in France, a lot of like elders, like some of the elders of our church were in the GBU when they were students. So the GBU really equips students to become members of churches, involved in churches and evangelism, because it gives them a good foundation. We're not trying to steal students from any church or push them all to one church, because there is a lot of churches that are hesitant when they hear a parachurch ministry is in France. And the biggest thing for me, it's the biggest, I think I said it last time I was here, the biggest pull and benefit of the GBU, it was established by the French for the French. When I was with the Navigators, great ministry, but they were established by Americans for the French. And I think the GBU has a better understanding of who the French are for that to help them. And adapted towards the French culture. I can't remember all the questions you asked.
Yeah. Just the effect of the ministry and a lot of people that did college that were in the group.
Yeah.
Are they back home living the Christian life, getting involved in evangelism or the church?
Yeah.
I would say for the most part, well, I've benefited from it, certainly. A lot of my friends who were in the group with me, they also have benefited from it. Like Garrett said, if I sometimes when I present the GBU in churches, I ask a show of hands who knows the GBU and who has benefited from it. And it's always really nice when a pastor and like almost all the elders raise their hand. It's like, yeah. yeah, okay, it works. So that's really nice. So I guess it has really... I mean, we can't predict what's going to happen with our students right now, but it's been encouraging to see like light bulb moments when they're like, oh, I've never seen this before in the Bible. Oh, I never understood that the Bible had like a whole structure. It's not just
random stories
that don't really connect, and see them become more confident in sharing their faith and how to answer tough questions and things like that. That's really cool.
So for the, I can go like some map quick. So France is around the size of Texas in size. So that's the kind of a good, so this is like, think of, well, like the southwest of Texas. And so they're pretty far apart. So for us to drive from Toulouse to Bordeaux, it's about?
It's 4 hours.
4 hours?
It's 4 hours.
4 hours by car?
Yeah, by car.
For some reason, I thought it was shorter. All right, well, it's 4 hours by car or 2 hours by train. So that's how far it's to get there. But then like Albi, which is the closest, and point to anything. Is this pointer work with the screen or probably not?
No.
All right. Well, the middle dot, well, you see the T and the S at the end. that's about, the closest dot to that one's about an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about the distance from there.
I started my ministry during COVID, so I didn't have to travel a lot. and this year it's like, oh, now I have to travel. So I've been to Bordeaux by train, it's about 2 hours, so that's not too big a deal, I just stay overnight. Recently we've been to Figeac, and that was like a 2.5 hour drive, but like, I now discovered, I understand better why Americans have no problem driving, because it's just straight, 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 straight. Whereas in France, to go to Figeac, it's 2.5 hours drive in tiny roads that are kind of windy, like this in a mountain.
It's awful.
So it's really tiring. I'm not used to driving, so it's been an adventure. When I show this map to French people, they usually go like, "Oh, it's big," and because it's a really big region. Public transport is okay, but it is a bit of a hassle, and driving can just be long. So I'm discovering it this year, but I'm enjoying it so far. So it's been good.
There's the phrase "All roads lead to Paris," and it's because all the roads lead to Paris; they don't lead to other cities. So, yeah. So if you want to go a way that's not towards Paris, it's hard.
Yeah. If you live in a big city like Toulouse or Bordeaux, you're probably okay in terms of public transport. But if you live in Figeac, like we said, it's 2.5 hours drive from where we live. But if I wanted to take the train, it would take me more than 3 hours, and I would have to change in several other cities. Yeah. So it's not really worth it.
Yeah.
I try and go about at least once a semester to give trainings and things like that. Now that COVID has been here, we discovered that Zoom works pretty well. So if I can do things online, I'll do things online as well. So Monday, I'll be giving a training to the students at Albi via Zoom. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm. I saw a question back there in the corner.
Or somewhere.
Somewhere. Oh, there, sorry. Yeah, so young people, yes. Are you talking about older people or just young people still?
Well, I mean, just in America, I think my coworker said, I'm scared. I think I'm going to get out. And she said, lots of people are scared of COVID. I wonder, is that in France? Is it visible?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, Tina. For me, like, the idea of students still pondering over their own mortality is still pretty low. It's just like within the US, there was big parties when COVID first hit. And so it's still kind of the same thing in France. People just don't want to obey any laws, especially the young people. So COVID has, what it has done is make people feel more lonely. And so isolation and loneliness have been a bigger push for people to seek out something else and community and such, whereas as in their own mortality hasn't been a push of fear of death. It's been more loneliness and does anyone care for me? Like, because they realize when they're like alone in COVID, like no one contacted them, they don't see anyone. So they feel very isolated.
Yeah, especially for students who sometimes they live in dorms where their living quarters is basically, I don't know what it is in square feet, 13
square meters.
I have
no idea.
So it's just basically enough space for a bed, a desk, and maybe
a sink.
A sink or something. And that's it. And some of them have been stuck there for like, confined there for like, 2 months with all classes online. And if you're from a different town or even from a different country, well, that's too bad for you. because some students have been lucky enough to go back to their parents and to at least not by themselves. But if you're from really out of town or from you're an international student, well, you don't know anyone and you're just stuck in your tiny room for like 3 months, 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything's closed, there's nothing to do. So I think we're out of time.
I think we're all right.
Thanks everyone.
Yeah, thank you.